graphical works on his life and times, and that remain part of our popular culture, complicating our perspective on who, at different moments in his life, he might have actually been. The audiobook you're about to listen to is, among other things, an attempt to reevaluate Thompson's role as a political writer, as a literary journalist in the essayistic tradition whose activism remains underappreciated. To be sure, it constitutes one version among many, my own, a take that's been composed amid the very specific political climate we currently find ourselves inhabiting. To write this book, in addition to the years of research and interviews that went into its construction, I attended the 2016 political conventions in Cleveland and Philadelphia, and afterward reported on election night, the 2017 inauguration, and various protests in Washington, D.C. I'm only bringing up this series of events now to acknowledge the specific lens through which I've arranged everything you're about to hear. Which is to say, in writing about the past, I'm of course expressing in some manner my own concern for the current state of our institutions and ideals, for the Constitution, participatory democracy, and the independent press, that Hunter Thompson fought so tirelessly to defend. His perspective on the American Republic remains as valuable as ever. In this account, I've tried to dramatize his political evolution in the manner a novel might, while also citing every detail and quote along the way, with the hope of expressing, for you, the effort he put out as a writer and thinker to combat institutional injustice. In the end, his effort came at a dire personal cost. But during the period of time spanning John F. Kennedy's murder to Richard Nixon's resignation, it also set the real Hunter Thompson apart from the more outlandish versions we've come to identify with him. From the start, he understood better than most the possibilities and dangers inherent to the system of government that he liked to refer to as that fantastic possibility, the last, best hope of man. And whether you're already familiar with his fascinating career or happen to be coming to his story for the first time, I hope that you'll see in his perspective a timeless and necessary rigor, something worth considering every day, especially today. Chapter 1, The Valley of the Moon, 1963 to 1964. From the Emptiness of the Sky Itself. On an autumn afternoon in 1963, Hunter S. Thompson, a 26-year-old journalist living in a small rented cabin with his wife Sandy, was startled by a knock at the door. This was on Woody Creek Road, just outside of Aspen, Colorado. He and Sandy had been staying there since the end of the summer, a temporary arrangement. Thompson had recently been offered the position of West Coast correspondent for the National Observer, a weekly general interest newspaper owned by the Dow Jones Company, and the current plan was to save up enough money for a more permanent move to California. At the time, Sandy was 6 months pregnant. Thompson went to the door and opened it. Their neighbor, a rancher by the name of Wayne Wagner, was standing on the porch. Something was up. You could see it in the man's eyes, a pressing, expectant look. Wagner got right to the point. There'd been violence, he said, down in Dallas. John F. Kennedy had been shot. What's more, he was dead. Murdered. Thompson let out a sob. In the next moment, he started swearing. He swung his eyes at Wagner, briefly hoping that what he just heard might in fact be the setup to some outrageous punchline, but no. This pioneer family rancher wasn't the joking type. November 22, 1963. That afternoon, the information traveled the continent, occupying everything, a lament of incontestable volume. Thompson found out the way most people did, personally. Only later did you switch on the radio or television for confirmation. This much was clear. The head of the American government had been cut down by rifle fire in the broad Texas daylight, and the perpetrator, it was beginning to appear, came from the left of the political spectrum, a deranged communist with ties to Cuba and the Soviet Union, who'd coiled himself on the sixth floor of a nearby building to strike as if from everywhere at once.